Thank you for listening to the Damage Report podcast, the show covering the true threats facing our country and what you can actually do about them. You can support this free podcast by leaving us a review and giving us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you happen to be listening to it. Every review helps more people discover the show at no cost to you. Welcome to another week at the Damage Report, everybody. I am Johnny Rolla. It's Monday, and Brooke Thomas is here.
I'm here. Yeah.
Welcome to the studio.
Thanks for having me.
Hairstyle.
Yeah. I'm
very glad to have you.
You always notice. I appreciate you.
I don't always notice, but I did this time.
You're right. My hair was cut short for a couple weeks before. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. It's all right. Yeah.
Well, very excited to have you here, especially because today is kind of a big deal. Obviously, we're going to be talking about the tragedy, the massacre at the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh in just a little bit. Also, an update on Brazil's election. They had it, and the bad guy won. We're going to be breaking down what's likely to come from that and also reminding you a little bit about why many people were concerned about what direction he would take Brazil in. A little bit later on, we're going to have an update on Megyn Kelly. So she's out, but she might be looting the place on her way out. She wants some money, and you're going to be amazed at the amount. So we're going to debate whether or not she's going to get it. But also, a little bit later on the show, we're going to be joined by two guests. In New Jersey's 6th District Congressional race, candidate Mahmoud Mahmoud is a third-party candidate. He's going to be joining us talking about running against the established parties and doing so without taking corporate money. So that's going to be very interesting. And in just a little bit, we're going to be joined once again on the Damage Report by Fred Guttenberg, one of the fathers from Parkland, who tragically lost his daughter, Jamie. We're going to be talking about the midterm elections, the recent spate of political violence in the U.S., and more. So, lots to get to, obviously.
Lots to get to.
So much so. Let's start off on a bit of a somber note. Mm-hmm. Of course, over the weekend, there was a shooting at a synagogue. The Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh was the target of an apparently virulently anti-Semitic gunman. 11 people were killed there. Multiple others, including 4 police officers, were injured. Now, in the end, they did have a shootout with this individual. He was injured and has been taken in and is apparently in some sort of stable condition or something at a hospital. And, you know, amidst all of obviously how terrible this is, just again, take note, they were able to take this guy alive. Weird how some people with ARs and stuff they're able to take. Weird how that always works out. But with 11 people being killed, this attack is believed to be the deadliest on the Jewish community in U.S. history, according to the ADL. So, not just objectively a horrific act, but possibly the single largest act of violence against the Jewish community in the U.S. And I anticipate that people will take it very seriously for a day, maybe 2 days, and then that's it. Because our country has normalized so many things, including acts of apparently politically motivated violence. But we do know some of the charges. That they're saying that they're going to be looking for the death penalty against Robert Boyers, the shooter. He's charged with 11 counts of using a firearm to commit murder, multiple counts of 2 hate crimes, obstruction of the exercise of religious beliefs resulting in death, and obstruction of the exercise of religious beliefs resulting in bodily injury to a public safety officer. So serious charges.
Yeah. Facing both federal and state charges.
Mm-hmm. The case seems pretty strong against him. Mm-hmm. And as we're going to get into, this is a guy who has been very clear, both with police officers and in general, with the sorts of things that motivated him to commit this horrible atrocity. Now, in the wake of it, obviously, that community is grieving. You know, 11 people were killed, many of them parents, grandparents, longstanding members of this particular synagogue. Rabbi Jeffrey Myers of the area said that in response to this, what we need to do, sort of speaking to the responsibility that we have culturally, but also that politicians have, said, it starts with speech. It has to start with you as our leaders. My words are not intended as political fodder. I address all equally. Stop the words of hate.
Mm-hmm.
And you're seeing there, one woman is 97 years old. I mean, obviously, any of them is obviously tragic, but these are people who've been in that area, going to that synagogue for so long, trusting their community, and then targeted by an anti-Semitic maniac.
Yeah, and just thinking about like someone being 97 years old and then imagining, you know, 97 years, what she has survived as a Jewish mm-hmm. woman.
Yeah.
And to die in a shooting, an anti-Semitic shooting.
Yeah.
In modern day America. Like, what?
Yeah, to see the individual acts of violence, but also to see sort of the national mood on things that seemed like we weren't going to be debating them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like it seemed like we understood that Nazism was bad at one point.
Right.
And now we have to talk about that again. Not just with the Nazis,
but also
with-
We have to interview them. We have to give them understanding. We have to ask them why. It's like been so normalized.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, so many people are at fault for that.
Yeah. Yeah, we have congressmen who are openly endorsing like horribly anti-Semitic candidates, both here and in other countries. You know, mm-hmm. Steve King is obviously the best example of that. We've backslid so much on things that it didn't seem like we would have to have national debates on,
right.
But perhaps we do. So the reason that I read the quote from that rabbi is that we are in this moment following the shooting at the synagogue, but also the wave of attempted bombings. And it seemed like, obviously, there's not going to be any responsibility taken for any of the demonizing and scapegoating individual politicians, but also George Soros as the avatar of Jewish badness in the world. There are already ads being run against him again. He's popping up in right-wing tweets and things like that. So the fact that he was not murdered by this attempted bomb last week doesn't mean that he won't be targeted again, and they're using him again.
Mm-hmm.
And so the rabbi wants a little bit less words of hatred targeting groups like this when we know that there are insane people out there that will act on it. And so what do we get from the top? Donald Trump today saying the fake news is doing everything in their power to blame Republicans, conservatives, and me for the division and hatred that has been going on for so long in our country. Actually, it is their fake and dishonest reporting which is causing problems far greater than they understand. So in a thing where he is attempting to cause division, he's saying how unfair of them it is that they're saying he's responsible for that. He also went back to calling them not just the enemy of the people, but the true enemy of the people. So in response to CNN almost being blown up,
right.
He's now escalated even farther.
And sure, he didn't start the division in this country, sure. But like, are you doing anything at all to change it? No. Mm-hmm. No,
yeah.
Like, are you promoting it? Yes.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, we can look at the individual people responsible for both sets of violence, and,
mm-hmm.
and in particular, I want to focus on the synagogue shooter. These are people that are not just random weirdos, but they seem to be true believers. Like the guy who sent the bombs, he believed every right-wing meme and conspiracy theory that you can imagine.
He literally decorated his vehicle with it.
Like, exactly. He turned his van into a 4chan like thread.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you have this guy. So Robert Bowers, hours before the shooting on Gab, which is like where people go after Twitter throws them off for being like way too bad. Twitter will allow a lot, but at some point they do draw the line. What we believe to be the guy who did the shooting said, Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society likes to bring in invaders that kill our people. I can't sit by and watch my people get slaughtered. Screw your optics, I'm going in. And if it's not immediately clear what he's referring to there, understand that on there and elsewhere, he frequently posted about the migrant caravan that is being used by the right wing to scare people into supporting them in these midterm elections. Constantly, like he calls it an invasion. It's not an invasion. It's something that has happened many times before. It's people that are going to look for asylum. Many of them, perhaps all of them, won't even make it to the US. It's a thing that happens all the time, totally normal. But right-wing politicians are using it to scare people. And then you have this crazy person who gets all worked up, constantly posting about the caravan, and then goes to a synagogue and shoots it up.
Right.
So is any one person who talked about the caravan responsible for that? No. But there are crazies who are listening to this sort of rhetoric and acting on it.
Right. Should you take responsibility for, you know, actions that may have led to this? This is why I've always said, like, I'm not a free speech absolutist. I'm just not. Because words have meanings, and a lot of them, some of them are violent.
Mm-hmm.
And look, there's this entire social media site dedicated to just, like, the vile hatred.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're, you know, proud that they got a bunch of clicks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Gab is doing damage control. But are they going to fundamentally change? Are they going to, you know, take stock of the fact that they have turned into a place that is known for this?
Right?
Exactly.
Like,
exactly. And they're not going to do that.
I think and then we also learned this weekend that the shooter, the man who walked into the grocery store and shot two black people, he attempted to go into a church.
Yep.
Right before that. Like, it's just like, you know, this, our country is being led so much by people who just like swear they're just like great, it's Christianity and it's so persecuted and it's just, we have to live by that. And
mm-hmm.
their followers
exactly.
are going into places of worship.
Yeah, and while all of this is going
people.
On right now, there will be
I don't
no.
understand that.
Yeah, I'm trying to.
You're right.
So there'll be no like critical thought about the right wing from the right wing because they come up with these BS arguments about why they don't have to do it. So with this guy, a guy who's like ranting about the migrant caravan and stuff like that, they say, no, he's not one of us. He hates Trump.
Right.
And their reason for saying that is that he has said on Gab that Trump isn't hard enough on the Jewish community. So that makes him an opponent of Trump, a Trump hater, because he was more extreme on this issue than Donald Trump. And he was disappointed with Donald Trump for not like making good on the promise of Donald Trump.
And also the fact that isn't hard enough is even a thing. It should be he isn't hard at all, because there should be no reason to be hard on the Jewish community.
Exactly.
Like, it's just not even, there's so many things that I think people, that kids, you know, are waking up this morning that they have to think about. Like, I saw a mother saying that she was worried that she was being a bad mother for taking her kids to a synagogue.
Because she's worried. Yeah.
And she was worried that may be irresponsible. A woman whose husband had chose to convert, she apologized to him for dragging him into this.
Yeah.
Like, this is horrible.
Yeah.
And people on Twitter are wondering, like, which of their friends, if it came to that, would hide them in their ceilings. Mm-hmm. Like, it's 2018. This is horrifying.
And the thing is, last thing, I know that we're going over. The last thing is, like, I understand that when people are out of power, populist leaders can say, you know what, we're going to take this thing back. And here are all the people that have destroyed things. You know what, we're going to address it. But I don't think it's often the case historically where the group that has every bit of political power in the country, they have all of it, still feels like they need to go after every perceived enemy. Okay. Like Donald Trump, his true talent apparently is keeping people who have every advantage, every privilege, everything economically, socially, and in terms of government power, and still making them think that they have to lash out at every group that's coming for them.
There is nothing in front of the line. Like, what's the problem?
Yeah. They see someone coming from the back.
You can't go any further than the front of the line.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today, and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Fine.
I'm right there with you.
Okay,
we do have to take a quick break. When we come back, Fred Guttenberg is going to be joining us. He's one of the dads of the kids that was slain in the Stoneman Douglas shooting. We're going to be talking about the continuing political violence in our country, more mass shootings, obviously, and the midterms after this. With the midterms just a little bit over a week away, many people are crisscrossing the country attempting to mobilize, to do all these activist actions, get people out there and vote. And one of those who's doing perhaps more than anyone else actually is Fred Guttenberg, a friend of the show. Welcome back, Parkland Dad, obviously. And thank you so much for everything that you're doing around the country in advance of the election.
Thank you. How are you doing?
With the news the past week, not so good necessarily, but you know, we gotta stick in there. There's an election coming up.
You know, I don't have words to describe how I've been feeling since that happened. Horrified. This was again preventable. And I see history repeating itself. And what I mean by that is, in the immediate aftermath after Jamie was killed, our president Senator Rubio and others all started talking about everything but the gun. They talked about mental health. They talked about school safety. They talked about armed guards, but they never spoke about the gun. It's one of the reasons why I went after Rubio at the town hall a week later. This weekend, and I say this as a Jewish person, they're doing it again, and they're using my religion to try to pull it off. This was an anti-Semitic hate crime, make no doubt about it, and I'm horrified by what happened. But let's also not ignore the fact that this happened because somebody was able to walk into a temple with an AR-15.
Yeah.
This is also about the gun, and we must not let them pull the conversation away from that.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. He had pistols, but also an AR-15. Just a weird coincidence. They all seem to go for that, even though, you know, the right wing says it doesn't matter. You can do it with any gun. Hell, you could do it with a hammer or with a knife, but they all seem to want the AR-15. That is weird.
It's a destructive weapon.
Exactly.
Pretty destructive, yeah.
Now, I wanted to ask you one more question about that, though. We read a quote earlier in the show from an area rabbi calling on political leaders to saying that it starts with speech, you know, stopping this sort of violence and asking for them to stop demonizing their opponents and speaking words of hatred and things like that. It seems like both from this attack and also from last week's attempted string of mail bombs, the political leadership, Donald Trump and all that, they don't seem to be moderating their speech at all. What do you think about that?
So let's first, you mentioned the political leadership. So the party in charge right now, we haven't actually heard from them for the most part. Have you heard from McConnell? Because I don't think I have.
No.
Have you heard from Ryan? Because he's sort of been in timeout for a while, but this would be a good time for him to come out of timeout. Because we haven't heard from him. So we haven't heard from the political leadership. We've heard from the president. And unfortunately, you can't walk away from the reality of what his speech, his comments do. And to make it worse, he continued to do it through the weekend. You know, if you go back to the last week, the night he spoke about the bombings or the attempted bombings, he was mocking it.
Yeah.
This was an attempted domestic terror threat and he was mocking it. On the day of the shooting, he was making a joke about a bad hair day, but then trying to do anything he could to try and turn this into something that it wasn't. I really, for the safety of our country, I'm gonna say this as gently as I can, the man needs to be quiet.
I could sign on to that. So look, I wanna talk to you about the midterms, because obviously that could help to mitigate some of the damage they're able to do. And I know you're looking for an orange wave in this midterm. I saw some interesting data. I think it might have actually been you that spread this. 40% of voters under 30 say they will definitely vote this year. That's up 14 points from 2014, and Trump is not much loved by this group. What do you attribute this rise in enthusiasm, particularly amongst young voters, to?
Well, and number one, I did tweet some of that data out earlier. These kids want to be safe. They want to live in a world where they can be social, where they can go to school, where they can earn a living without fear of being killed. And this issue is one of the dominant issues right now that they will be voting on. They also, these kids have a mentality that is different than the political leadership in place right now. They are civil, they are decent, and they are horrified by our elected legislative leaders who are not. And they're determined to be part of the change, and they will be. I think this is gonna be the election where our polls are officially incorrect, because these kids are gonna show up and vote. And if you talk to anybody under 30 years of age, they do not have landlines. They only work off of cell phones. So that means they're not getting polled for the most part. And they're gonna be an enormous voting block, and they're not showing up in polls.
I know you're focused on a lot of different elections, but are there any across the country that stand out to you as especially important?
Well, I'll start here in Florida. We must elect Andrew Gillum. We cannot have a Trump puppet as our governor. a guy who's already said he would undo the gun safety legislation that we passed in this state. We must keep Senator Bill Nelson in the Senate, because to me, while it's pretty clear the House is going to flip, there's nobody who I want to fire from leadership more than Mitch McConnell. I think Mitch McConnell has done more to enable Donald Trump than anyone else. And if we can flip a few Senate seats, we can fire him from his leadership position. When I look at Florida, and other states may have similar things, Florida has what's known as the Department of Agriculture. And in this state, the Commissioner of Agriculture plays an enormous role in the background checks and the issuing of gun licenses. In the state of Florida, it is the office that the NRA has basically worked out and to negative effect. So that election here is critically important. We have a great candidate, Nikki Fried, who we need to elect, because the first day she'll kick the NRA out of that office.
Yeah.
But when you look around the country, I've been all over the place. I was just with Danny O'Connor in Ohio, Lucy McBath. You have Governor Cordray in Ohio. These are states that can really send strong messages by saying we've had enough of the way it was, and we're going to make a change.
Yeah. Well, Fred, I want to thank you for joining us on the show again. Keep up the great work. We've only got a little bit more than a week left.
Let's get this done. Thank you.
Let's do it. Okay, thank you.
Have a good day.
You too. We're going to take a short break. We come back, more news to get to, and then we're going to check in on another, like, terrible election mailers are one of the big lowlights of this election. We've got one for you a little bit later on. Welcome back to the Damage Report. Just a few weeks ago, we did a preview of the Brazilian election and primarily a profile of Jair Bolsonaro, the far right is, I think putting it mildly, candidate, who it seemed like at that point was likely to go on to become president. Well, the election just happened, and indeed he did win. And so now we get to take stock of what is likely to happen to Brazil and the people that live in Brazil as they greet as their new president a guy who seems like a sociopath. And certainly an extremist, even if he doesn't make good on some of his past statements, some of which we will remind you of in this segment, he is very much an extremist. And that is consequential, not just for law and order issues in Brazil, but even things like management of the Amazon. Because he is a guy who seems extraordinarily ready to just clear it out, burn it down. And we know that that can have an extremely outsized effect on climate change. That's just one thing we're gonna talk more generally too. But he ended up winning, I think it was 55-45. So a good sized victory, about what was expected. And now we'll be president. Mm. What do you think?
New day dawning
for Brazil.
Right. As soon as when I walked in this morning, like, oh, so Brazil, they elected Donald Trump. Okay, cool. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. Maybe more extreme than Donald Trump. We'll see. I don't know. Donald Trump gives him a run for his money.
We have no idea. Like, we don't know. There is no bar here in America. Mm-hmm. There is. Because it changes.
This past
every
week has been
week.
Has been something here.
Yeah.
But I want to talk a little bit about what's going on there. Many people are worried. If you're an indigenous person in Brazil, he said awful things there. If you're Afro-Brazilian, just awful things that he has said about that community. If you're a member of the LGBTQ community in Brazil, he has talked about wanting to beat the gay out of his son if it turned out that his son was gay. So many people are worried. Those who oppose him use the slogan hashtag Elenau, not him, because of his misogynistic comments, such as once reportedly telling a woman colleague in the legislature that she was, quote, not worthy of being raped by him. To be fair, he said, I'm not a rapist, but if I was a rapist, I wouldn't rape you because you don't deserve it. Which is something. Right. Now, in the run-up to the election, one of the things that helped to bolster what was already widespread support for him was, hey, here's a weird thing, fake news. In the months leading up to the election, Facebook shut down more than 100,000 WhatsApp accounts spreading conspiracy theories about Bolsonaro's opponents to voters across Brazil. And there was also a lot of violence and threats of violence against traditional media in Brazil as well. A nonprofit journalism group, the Brazilian Association of Investigative Journalism, documented at least 141 cases of threats and violence against reporters covering the presidential elections. In one case, a Bolsonaro supporter shot up a bus that was filled with reporters. Thankfully, no one was injured. But Look, he's been very aggressive against the media. He talks about fake news. He has chosen, it's not CNN in this case, but there's one Brazilian newspaper that's considered sort of the Brazilian newspaper of record that he continually attacks and demonizes. So another page out of the Trump playbook.
Right, and it's kind of that same kind of game plan where you have a leader that says horrible things, that imply horrible things, but they swear they don't mean it. And just by chance, they have all these followers who are pushed to violence. Mm-hmm. And they don't want there to be, you know, any sort of connection to that. But I mean, at some point, you have to just acknowledge what's there.
Yeah, exactly. And the failure, constant failure to denounce these sorts of things or to do it in a, you know, a both sides sort of way and all that. Exactly. Now, one of the things, like, so it seemed like he was going to win. We were very worried about it, obviously, but he won. One of the things that was scaring me in the lead up to it was the willingness of certain media outlets here in the US to whitewash his record. And we've got, I could have done, you know, an entire hour on this, but we've plucked out a few choice bits of Western media helping to normalize Bolsonaro and his past. CBC News Alerts tweeted, Brazil's new president-elect Jair Bolsonaro is a right-winger who leans more towards open markets. This could mean fresh opportunities for Canadian companies looking to invest in the resource-rich country. So that is about as tone-deaf a take on this proto-dictator taking up the presidency of Brazil as I can imagine, especially when what they seem to be indicating is exactly the sort of thing like the stripping of the Amazon that we're worried about. But hey, they found a silver lining, so that's great.
The reporter who wrote that too also kind of tweeted in, like, in defending the article, like, you know, death threats are welcome, but just only from people who've read the whole thing. And I read the whole thing, and that's a perfect summary.
Exactly. That's the thing.
The article, it's pretty horrible.
Exactly. We can't go through the whole article all the time, but yeah, when it's consistent.
Did.
I know, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying on the show, we can't.
Obviously, we're too
in practice.
Right, right.
Like, for instance, Fox News, Brazil elects anti-establishment candidate Jair Bolsonaro as president. And the crazy thing is, I read that article. If you were to read through that, you would not be worried that he's going to stage a military coup or that he prefers dictatorship or all of that. It's weird. Let's see. Wall Street Journal. So Wall Street Journal, when we initially did our reporting on Bolsonaro, it was in response to an extremely favorable Wall Street Journal op-ed about Bolsonaro. So they're back after the election in an article called Bolsonaro Takes Brazil. And I actually, in this case, want to read a little bit of the article for you. The woman who wrote this said, he was labeled a racist, a misogynist, a homophobe, a fascist, an advocate of torture, and an aspiring dictator. It ought to have been enough to sink the Bolsonaro candidacy, yet he prevailed. And it isn't hard to see why. Brazilians are in the midst of a national awakening in which socialism, the alternative to a Bolsonaro presidency, has been put on trial. And again, the only reference to his horrible past statements are in that quote, saying he was labeled that. Well, yes, he was labeled that, but he wasn't labeled that by me. First of all, he was labeled that by himself when he said that if his son was gay, he would beat him. That if you, what do you think about relationship in interracial marriages? He said that's fornication. So when asked about dictatorship, he said, and this is a simple quote, simple enough for the writer in the Wall Street Journal to understand. He said, I would prefer a dictatorship. He said that he would institute a military coup on the first day if he became president. I guess now we'll see if he will in fact actually do that. He said that the only mistake that Brazil's former dictatorship made was that they preferred torture to killing. So I guess that was actually the torture thing was wrong there. He thought that they should have done less torture, more killing. The dictator of Chile should have killed more people, he said. And I think he said specifically it would have been improved if they'd rounded up and killed 30,000 people. So again, filtered through right-wing or center-right US media, that's labeling him things. No, that is what he is doing. That is what he is promising. And he's not some new anti-establishment guy. He's been in government for literally decades, and he's been saying these things for literally decades.
It's the same. It's this idea where you don't have to, your words aren't account. You don't have to be accountable for your words. Mm-hmm. You can say something and then say it means something else.
Yeah.
Or do you know what I mean? Like, you can say something completely racist, but don't call you a racist because that's not fair. So then you're labeled. It's kind of like calling yourself a nationalist and, you know, then being like, but that's not what I meant. Mm-hmm. I meant something else that I'm not going to explain, but that's what,
Yeah, and it's bolstered by the fact that in these cults of personality, your fans will give you every benefit of the doubt beyond any reasonable limit. And the media, like, again, hashtag nothing matters. This person in the Wall Street Journal has read those quotes. But she has a narrative that she wants to push. So whatever, who cares if Brazil descends into a dictatorship? Maybe, like with the CBC, maybe the Wall Street Journal is primarily interested in opening up the Brazilian market more to US companies. God only knows. But if that means that some Brazilians need to be tortured or they need to be killed because this guy seems to have liked that for literally decades, who cares about that stuff? That's just labeling him homophobic, labeling him misogynistic because he says that he has very high standards for who he would rape. You go crazy doing this job,
right?
Because nobody cares about anything anymore. Nothing counts for anything. Is this woman going to lose her job because she wrote a fact-free profile of this incoming president?
Not at the Wall Street Journal.
She'll probably get a raise. Okay, we do have to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by a US politician, actually, who has not said any of those sorts of things. Candidate Mahmoud Mahmoud, who's running in New Jersey for Congress, is going to be joining us and talking about running in 2018 as a third-party candidate after this. Okay, in this run-up to the midterms, we only have a little bit more time to profile the many amazing candidates around the country. And I want to continue that, inviting to the show now Mahmoud Mahmoud, running in New Jersey's 8th Congressional District. Mahmoud, welcome to the Damage Report.
Thank you for having me on, John and Brooke.
Good to have you on. Yeah, Brooke actually might be getting involved in this. We'll have to see. So first of all, I'm very interested. I know that in this midterm cycle, there's a lot of new political candidates who haven't previously run. Have you previously pursued political office?
This is my first time.
Okay, well, awesome. There's been a good number of that. That's what we want to see. So I am curious then, what is your background that led to you wanting to run for office in this particular cycle?
Sure. So my first experience coming to the United States at the age of 4 was my mother, pushing me into a clothing bin drop to get clothes for me and my family. And those experiences, struggling financially, stuck with me because I saw my family struggling financially. My mother worked so many different jobs, my father as well, and we struggled financially. So I said I wanted to be able to one day be in a position that I can help people. So I went to college. I worked as a community organizer around housing, education, and safety and gun violence. I was a director for an immigration and refugee program. I was a director for services to the armed forces, providing support to veterans and their families. And I traveled to over 30 countries in the world, and I worked for the United Nations as well. So, my experiences in the humanitarian sector, in organizing, and in community and public service, that's what pushed me to run for office, because I see a lot of elected officials that care only about, their seats and staying in power, rather than doing what's right for the people. And I believe that elected office is for the people, by the people.
I certainly agree with you there. So that's awesome history that you have there. So I want to ask you, you're running in this case as a third party candidate for the New Way Forward party. What is it like in this cycle when things are so divided seemingly between the Democrats and the Republicans, running as a third party candidate? What is that like? How does that shape your strategy?
And yeah, I mean, you've hit it right on the head, because right now when I talk to people, they're like, oh, are you a Republican or are you a Democrat? As if we don't have any other options in this country. And I think that's what the problem is with this country, is that we feel like we either must be with the red team or with the blue team. And that's why nothing is getting done. We have so many government shutdowns and gridlocks. And I'm deciding to be for the red, white, and blue team, because I think we all need to care about America and what's best for it. And I don't think that either side is getting anything done. And a lot of people who are in those positions don't stand up for what's right. They stand up for their own party.
So sometimes it's a little bit hard when people aren't familiar with your party to understand where you're coming from. So I've been over your list of issues and all that. But for people who might not be familiar with you, how would you describe your political approach in terms of the issues?
Sure. I most closely align with Bernie Sanders as far as universal health care for all, free college tuition, guaranteeing that everybody has a safe and affordable way to provide access to healthcare, which we don't see in this country. I connect with so many different people from so many different backgrounds. And time and again, people take a look at my name and they say, oh, Mahmoud, Mahmoud. No, I prefer Jesus. And immigration is a big key that I strongly care about. And that's a dividing issue from in this district that I'm in, District 8. So those are just some of the things. But as far as who I closely align with, it is Bernie Sanders' platform.
So I also noticed that, like a lot of candidates, thankfully, in this cycle, you're against sort of the corporate funding of campaigns. So in terms of your own fundraising, what has it been like, not only, you know, opposing those sorts of traditional ways that a lot of politicians fund their campaigns, but also operating as a third party candidate? What has it been like to pursue funding for your own campaign?
Yeah, you got to go to different sources from people who are not your average people who get involved in the political process. So I go to who, you know, do like independents. And believe it or not, there's a whole bunch of people that do like independent candidates now more than ever. So that those are my funding sources, from communities who are Arabs, immigrants, Hispanic communities, the Black communities, all different communities. I've been going to Sikh temples, Hindu temples, many churches, Black churches, white churches. You know, so I'm going all over, and people are resonating with my message because they find me as such a refreshing and new type of candidate that actually speaks to truth to power.
Well, Mahmoud Mahmoud, candidate for New Jersey's 8th Congressional District, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me on, John.
Thank you. We're going to take one more break. We come back, a couple more stories we want to get to with what remains of the episode. We'll see you on the other side. Welcome back to the Damage Report, everybody. Let's, I guess, lighten things up a little bit. Megyn Kelly is out. We've known that for a few days now. But did you know how much she might be paid to not work anymore? So, look, she was recently let go or encouraged to quit or whatever you want to call it. But according to TMZ, she is now apparently asking for $50 million. $50 million. Yes. Now, look, let's just say she apparently was promised a certain number of years of pay. And because NBC decided to pay her $25 million a year.
Right.
She would make something like $30 million if her contract continued. I don't know where they're getting the extra $20 million from. Maybe it's a jumping off point. But
she only has
certainly wants a lot of money.
I think they're rounding it up to $50 million. Because if she's paid $25 million a year and she's been doing that show for about a year and 2 months, mm-hmm. then she basically has 2 years left on her contract. And at $25 million, you know, on average, it's 10 months, a year and 10 months. So that's basically 2 years, which means
true.
25 a year, that's 50. And so it sounds outlandish and crazy, but that's not where your shock should lie, I think. Because she is simply asking for what they signed off to give her.
So you think
the shock
she probably got a strong
should
case?
Lie with the fee? Yeah, absolutely, she's going to get this. But like the shock should lie with why she, this person who, you know, has a history of just spewing such hatred and just a bunch of things. She has consistently said really racist things. Mm-hmm. And she got a deal by, you know, one of the big three to make $25 million a year, knowing that this is her history. And it kind of reminds me of Roseanne. And these are not these, like, these are not some, like, moral decision. This is the market that made a decision. And people are, you know, still, networks are getting the market wrong because now you give her a broader audience. And people are like, whoa, no. And I'm not going to sit here and pretend that this lady in her late 40s doesn't, this lawyer, a journalist, a lawyer, a TV host, doesn't know or doesn't understand, or that we need to have some nuanced, calm, you know, sweet conversation to educate this grown woman, this mother, about blackface. No, she doesn't care. She either doesn't care that over and over and over again, people have been saying this is racist, or she doesn't believe it's racist because she does not believe black people are experts on anti-black racism.
Well, they might be biased.
Right, exactly. And so, you know, it's just like Roseanne. She got paid too. We're not talking about it, but
yeah, that's true.
They took her off of a show, but she's getting paid a lot for it.
Do you think that those comments were actually why she was fired?
No, I think that this was in the world. I think her show wasn't working.
Yeah,
because they
so
took her 60-minute style show off after they let her interview Mr. InfoWars.
Yeah.
So
was that was the first one? One
was it the first
ones.
One? Yeah, because it was. Wasn't it supposed to last longer and sort of kind of be like a Sunday night
probably,
news magazine
yeah.
program? And it only lasted what did it last? Three episodes?
I think it
like
might have been four. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't
and know. So I think this is just.
So that's the thing. If she's not actually
not
being fired over this, if she's being fired because she wasn't performing, and apparently that show wasn't popular even before she went crazy, and
it also
had
cost
Jones
so
on.
Much to make.
Yeah, so that's
entirely a second studio, new set. I mean, yeah.
So that's, I guess I don't write contracts and I don't have to try to snag the big names or whatever, but wouldn't you have some kind of performance clause or something like that? Like if you're paying someone $25 million, I thought it was 23, 25, maybe it rounded up, $25 million and just, if you do well, you do well, who cares? You know, and you know what? We're gonna assume you'll be so good here, we're gonna give you 3 years. That is absurd. That is crazy.
Yeah, but
that is crazy.
I think what happened to her show was shocking to the people who made this decision, because you don't bring someone over, and she was smashing it at Fox News. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, and then she kind of, because of her issues, her back and forth with the president, because the horrible things that he was saying about her, she had, like, you know, been catapulted into the national spotlight, you know, more like mainstream than Fox News is, I guess you could say. You don't offer somebody $75 million over a 3-year period if you don't think that they are absolutely gonna just knock it down. So I imagine there was some sort of, and then also I think she probably protected herself. I imagine there was nothing in there that she could be fired for saying certain things, because how can you fire? How can you have like some sort of like, okay, listen, don't say racist things in your contract to someone who looked in a camera and said, kids, Santa's just white. Mm-hmm. He just is.
Deal with it.
Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Right. What do you see? You know what you're getting.
And the girl that the cop beat was it No Angel? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So there's a few other things, apparently details about the case that she's gonna make, her and her lawyer. Apparently she's going to argue that she was treated with gross unfairness because at a town hall meeting Wednesday, Al Roker blasted her, and she wasn't invited to defend herself. So Al, you may have cost the network a lot of money there. And then also, they say that other NBC talent got a pass for insensitive comments, such as Joy Reid, who made homophobic comments. Although to be fair, they were made long before she actually worked at the network. So
then the argument is the same. They hired her after making inappropriate comments. They hired her after making it. So it's like,
yeah, but
you guys, it's
that's true. But I mean, look, I don't think Megyn Kelly was actually fired for these. But if you believe that she was fired for these comments, she made these comments after she was hired.
Right.
Whereas Joy Reid made them before.
True.
I'm going to be fair. I don't watch Joy Reid, but I don't think that Joy Reid is just going out there and saying, you know what, blackface, I don't get it. What's the big deal? I don't think that she's saying that. Anyway, so you think she's going to get the money, though?
Yeah, absolutely. They've all gotten the money. Everybody that's been fired out of these monster deals, everyone has gotten the money.
Isn't it crazy?
Imagine
what online news network you could create with the money they waste in settling with one horrible person. They blow through money like it's nothing. That is a crazy amount of money. It is great to be. When you are rich, and when you are famous, you can do anything you want. You never have to actually succeed. You can do 20 shows. They never have to do well. As long as people believe that you're good, you can just go on and you'll be fine for the rest of your life.
But the thing is, you know, the money was on the table regardless. And so right now we're talking about like giving her this money without having a job, but she was gonna get this money while having a job. And I think the issue lies in like, what can we do to demand that these people who have said, just like who have just been blatantly racist, don't get jobs.
Mm-hmm. Theoretically, we would
on
have
broadcast
to
television.
We would have to convince enough of the country that it's actually a problem.
Because
a significant portion of the country does not think it's a problem. Also, doesn't think that anyone's racist, doesn't think that that's a thing. It's a myth. Okay, let's just briefly touch on this. In Maryland, the Republican Party has chosen a questionable time to release a set of mailers implying that the left are the violent, dangerous ones. So let's bring up this first picture. You're gonna see, pay attention, conservatives. Liberals like these will be voting. So here we have the two mailers. So look, I'm gonna be honest. I don't understand the liberals like these will be voting. That just looks like a crowd of people. That could be anybody. I don't know what that is.
She's also using the American flag as a bandana.
So I understand that's supposed to be scary because she's a woman, but her head's shaved. That's crazy. The left one, though, like there's nothing scary about that. On the right one, yeah, she's doing a peace sign and she's using the American flag. That is apparently the most threatening image they could come up with. It literally has a symbol of peace in it.
Really patriotic. But on the right one, the sign in the background, can we see that again? Is that possible?
I think it's a feminist message.
It is, but it's just like, it's basically like a woman stands up for herself. She stands up for all women.
Yeah, no, if a woman stands up for herself, we're gonna demonize her to turn
out. That's not a bad thing, guys.
Yeah, let's also, we're in the wake of a hard right anti-Semitic synagogue shooting and a Trump supporter trying to assassinate a bunch of people at a media outlet, but also Democratic politicians. Maybe choose your timing a little bit better on trying to show that shaven-headed feminists are the big dangers in America today.
Right.
When was the last time a shaven-headed feminist shot up a place? I honestly don't know. Let's turn to the audience. Maybe they can figure it out. Okay, thank you, Brooke, for joining us.
Thanks.
Always good to have
me.
You here. We're going to have to see about the coverage for next week, but we're definitely going to see you at some point.
Yes.
Be good to see you then.
Take it.
Thank you for watching, everybody. We will see you next time. Thank you for listening to the Damage Report podcast, the show covering the true threats facing our country and what you can actually do about them. You can support this free podcast by leaving us a review and giving us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you happen to be listening to it. Every review helps more people discover the show at no cost to you.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.